So we got this text from producer Jack today. Hey guys, go check out the Thunderbolts trailer. It just dropped. It'll make for some good content. No.
Absolutely not. I think a better way to do this, I was just talking to you before this. I found some other news that would be more interesting than talking about Thunderbolts. So, really quickly, I'd imagine you didn't watch the Thunderbolts trailer, right?
No, I have no interest.
All right. Is there a worse sign for a movie that the teaser trailer is over 3.5 minutes?
That's rough. This is with like Pew and Harbor and them, right?
Yep, it's essentially Marvel's Suicide Squad, but PG-13ified, Disney-fied. It seems like they're going to do some cool things. There was a sweet action scene they showed. Florence Pugh, what's up? But other than that, not a whole lot going on here, and I do not care. So I have better news to share if you'd like to jump in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mickey 17 trailer with Pattinson, Steven Yeun. I think it looks awesome. Have you seen it yet?
I have not. I am on this mission right now, like a self mission of only watching trailers in theaters, especially because the local AMC shows 25 minutes every time. Like I get to see every trailer that I want. Unless you're going to Transformers 1, then the trailers are a little weird. But I get to see all the trailers when I'm at the movies, and I think that's the way they're meant to be enjoyed. I'm not going to watch these on my phone.
I will avoid talking about the plot. Pattinson is going to kick ass here. The cast is loaded. The premise is interesting. I don't think it's going to be a 10 out of 10 masterpiece, but this is going to be a super fun watch when it comes out.
Cool. I mean, Yoon and Pattinson obviously are towards the top of my list of current actors, so you know I'll be seeing that.
Yeah. And this is from the same guy that did Snowpiercer. Like, obviously. I want to say he did Parasite too. Am I
Yeah,
getting
Bong
this right?
Joon-ho.
Yes. And
Ah.
he did Snowpiercer, correct?
Yes, he did. He also
Okay.
did like Okja, a lot of great movies, but Parasite might be my least favorite of his. That's a bad take,
So what I
probably.
was going to get with here with this is like foreign films are his wheelhouse. I think Snowpiercer is kind of overrated and only Americans that don't want to watch a movie with subtitles like Snowpiercer. I fear Mickey 17 could hover in that territory. It looks interesting. It honestly does. But I wouldn't be surprised if we walk out of it and say, like, okay, like that was fun. That's about it, though.
Interesting. I will say, I had a discussion about subtitles with one of my friends the other day because The Boy and the Heron recently came to Max, which I'm excited for because I didn't get to catch that in theaters. When it is such a stacked American voice cast like that, where you have Pattinson, Hamill, like so many people in these lead roles in an animated film, are you still going with the subs or are you going dub?
I'm going subtitles. I will not watch English dub. It takes away from the purity of the movie.
Interesting. For me, the only excusable way, like time to go dub is when it is like a Studio Ghibli specifically where they have enough budget to actually get a voice cast that will make the movie good.
Very, very fair. I'm not against it. It's
Okay.
just not my wheelhouse. Final little news tidbit for you. James McAvoy's all over news and all over social media for Speak No Evil right now. He came out and revealed that Joaquin Phoenix dropped out of Split playing the Beast 2 weeks prior to filming. Talk about a crazy what if. Now, I think Phoenix would have been fine as the Beast. I think he would have been really good. Does this mean that there's some alternate universe where James McAvoy is Todd Phillips' Joker?
No, definitely not.
Really?
I don't think so. I don't think McAvoy could pull that one off. I'm not gonna lie. I think it's like a Phoenix could do either. McAvoy might not. And even Phoenix as the Beast, I think would be more of like a. It would have to have more of a campy tone. I don't think Joaquin can get that scary.
You mean McAvoy? Oh, you no, Joaquin for Split. I don't know. I think it could work. I think he could do just about anything. And if you remember Split, it is kind of campy. Like, it is goofy at times. I mean, it gets scary towards, like, the back, like, 20 minutes because he's such a physical presence. I couldn't see Phoenix, like, bulking up for this role, that's for sure.
I don't know, man. He dropped, like, what, 60 pounds for Joker? So, maybe.
Just, I thought that was a cool what if.
Yeah.
And those two tidbits of news are far greater than whatever the Thunderbolts drops this summer.
Here's a better question. If Joaquin Phoenix does Split, does James McAvoy do Beau Is Afraid?
Yes. Yes, he does. And I think it works. I'm a big McAvoy guy. I don't understand. I think he can play wonky. I mean, we watched him do it in Glass. I don't know.
I think McAvoy could pull off Beau Is Afraid. I just don't know about Joker. That feels weird to me.
Fair enough.
All right. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Bones. And today we have a little bit of a mishmash episode. Our new movie of the week is Transformers 1, which we'll be discussing before diving into the first portion of our October Pod series and breaking down some of our favorite haunted house films. Before we get into it, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Heath Ledger here. I'm happy to announce that the next version of the Blast Movie app is officially in development. Expect a big overhaul of everything theater related. We have some big collaborations coming up in 2025 that we are so excited to tell you about when the time is right. Until then, thank you for all your constant support and stay tuned.
All right, Ty, Blast Take of the Week time. I'm excited for this one because I found one that I just loved. This is from Zhercake, who is one of our users from Brazil. And he watched The Shining at home is the tag, but it's really at school. He said, watched it for the second time now in the school with three friends of mine. In our school, it is prohibited to drink soda or eat popcorn, but me and one of my friends decided to buy both of them and eat/drink while watching the movie. We prepared the popcorn on a microwave that stays on the patio of the school, so when we started to heat the popcorn, the smell started to rise. The monitor asked us to pack the popcorn away and not to eat it on the school, but we did it anyway. Parentheses, it was completely worth it. Blast grade A, movie grade A minus.
That is fantastic. Do you have any movies that you watched behind your parents' back or behind a supervisor's back?
I'm trying to think, honestly. I don't know.
I think, oh man, maybe Terminator 1. My dad and I watched it without my mom knowing. Oh, okay. Not both parents, but my dad, when my mom was on like a girls' trip, let me watch Varsity Blues. I shit you not, I was maybe 8 years old. I became a man that day. There's no question about it.
The only thing that comes to mind for me is Josh and I tried to sneak a Redbox copy of The Gallows, the Charlie movie, into my basement for a sleepover one time when we were in like sixth grade. And my mom was like, this is an R-rated movie. What are you guys doing?
Ruh-roh. Oh my gosh, I have a great one. So Dane, my high school buddy, my best friend, his mom was very strict on him when we were growing up. And R-rated movies were, I mean, completely out of the question. She was pretty buttoned up. And we wanted to watch 21 Jump Street. So we were hanging out in his basement and we didn't want to put it on the big screen TV because you can hear everything throughout the house. But they had like a guest bedroom. And so we went in there and like pretended we were having a sleepover in the guest room, but we were watching 21 Jump Street on my like iPhone 4 on the Comcast streaming app, laughing our ass off.
That is an awesome story. This ticket is just so great because it's bringing back so many memories of just like, I mean, these kids were probably thinking they were living Mission Impossible trying to pull this thing off, right?
And it sounds like they did, double A grade, so.
Yeah.
My ticket is pretty reminiscent of probably like A Cure for Wellness or Midsommar. So Can't Articulate saw The Substance which I've only heard just wonky buzz rolling on social media right now. But the ticket review reads, "My eyes! My eyes! I always considered Hannibal TV show to have the most disturbing body horror, but nah, this one takes the cake. Cake emoji. Almost threw up. I don't know if that is a negative or a positive blast grade-wise. Movie grade B, blast grade, A+. Sounds wow. like he's a body horror guy.
Nice. That's awesome.
I see, that's where I struggle, is like, if I feel like I have to throw up, I don't know if I consider that a blast time. I mean, it's memorable. I just don't know if it's a good memorable.
I remember going to see Titan with... It was with Al and Kazda. We drove to U of I from Wesleyan to see it because it had won the Palme d'Or, and I had heard that like people were throwing up and passing out in the theater when they were watching it. And I'm not going to lie, thought it was kind of tame.
Of course you did. I mean, you're numb to this stuff. I mean, you probably... You strike me as someone that like watched all the Saw kill scenes on YouTube growing up.
No, absolutely not. I don't... The thing is, like, I don't really enjoy that stuff, and I don't find it scary either, so I tend to just not watch those movies. But this one actually had, like, a wholesome story to tell behind all that gore, and that's what, like, made it cool.
Wholesome. Well, speaking of wholesome, we did watch a pretty wholesome movie this week in Transformers 1. But before we jump to Transformers 1, Mr. Host, I have a little fun game. You've been giving me a lot of trivia and a little lot of... many projects on the pod, and I have one for you. I recently saw the legend, the GOAT of movie scores, Hans Zimmer, live in Chicago, and I have a little bit of trivia for you on that experience. So I'm going to put my mic down, and I'm going to get ready for this.
Hit me, man. I'm excited. I wish I could have been there, but I don't have $600 to spend on those tickets.
They were very expensive. We were on the floor, and he came down during a performance for a given movie. I don't want to spoil it because trivia coming up. But he came out on the floor with his guitar. I shit you not, like four rows away from us. I felt like an eight-year-old fangirl. I wanted to cry for about 3 hours during that event.
Wow.
And we'll talk about a lot of this off pod, but I have five questions for you. Are you ready? Do you think you know Hans?
Yes, I do.
Okay, opening song for Hans Zimmer. What movie do you think it was from?
It has to be Interstellar.
It was not.
Inception?
Close. That was the second song. He played Mombasa as his second song. The first one is from Dune Part 2.
Interesting. Which track?
It's a long one. It's like A Quiet Time. Let me ring it up here. It was a Time of Quiet Between the Storms was the first song. And then he jumped straight into Mombasa to get the crowd going.
Nice. And
it was electric. So when I speak of electric, the crowd was fantastic the entire time, but there were three different movies that the audience went just absolutely berserk for. Do you think you can name the three movies?
Let me think here. So I assume two of them were... like Mombasa from Inception, and he had to have played something from Interstellar that people lost it for, right?
All right, Interstellar is one of the movies. Inception is not what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. Interstellar is one of them.
Did he play anything from Pirates?
Pirates was one of them. You have one more.
Okay. Can I get a hint?
Very obvious. Iconic.
Very obvious and iconic from Zimmer. Is this a Nolan movie or no?
Yes.
Is it... God, why am I blanking here?
Superhero.
Oh, DK, Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight.
Nice.
When I tell you, like a dog chasing cars went on and the place erupted. It was insane. And that's not to say the crowd wasn't lively for every single one, but Pirates of the Caribbean, the final song in that suite, the crowd exploded when Interstellar, like the first piano note played. I mean, like everyone was ready to stand. And Dark Knight was clearly the most electric. But
okay.
Question number three. Hans, he was talking a lot during this performance, between suites and between songs, and he came out and said, all right, this wasn't on the card. You guys know what's on the slate. We want to play something that isn't on the slate. This movie, in my opinion, is a bad movie, and I don't feel like enough people saw it, but the tracks are great, so we want to play it. Do you think you know what the movie is? I'll give you a hint. You have not seen it.
Man, my guess was Top Gun Maverick.
oh, give me a break.
I haven't seen it. It's not, he did Boss Baby, right?
It is not Boss Baby.
I don't know. Hit me.
Dark Phoenix.
Ugh.
Dude, it was unbelievable. That score is a banger. The movie sucks. And I thought it was funny that he acknowledged that.
That's cool. That's so interesting too.
There was a difference. Like, there would be times where he'd play one song versus like an entire suite from a movie. So not the final song of his performance or his concert. What do you think the final suite was? What movie?
Dude, I'm going to be so jealous if it's Electro.
No, it was The Lion King.
Huh, cool.
So he brought back the entire crew that performed all the songs. Like, everyone came back and they showed like a montage of them behind the scenes like 25 years ago making Lion King. It was really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
But it was like literally five tracks. It was explosive, super cool. The crowd just erupts, standing ovation. He's like, thank you all for this. Have a good night. And he walks off, lights start going out, and I'm ready to leave. Like, fuck, is that it? And like, he's closing with Lion King. Lights flash on two guys playing guitar. James Bond, No Time to Die, out of nowhere. And it was epic. But that was not the final song. So that was like his orchestra, his band playing No Time to Die. He comes back out to play the guitar for a little bit for Bond. And then the crowd is basically chanting like encore. Like, they want to run the whole thing back. He's like, all right, it's late. I want to go to bed. Like, go home. But I'll do one more song for you guys. What do you think the song is?
Flight?
He did play Flight, but that was not the final song.
Can I get a hint?
It is my favorite song of all time.
Time?
He gets on the piano and plays Time for Everyone, and the light is just shining on him the whole time. Dude, I wanted to cry. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Wow. Yeah. Ben, that's an A+ blast grade.
I wish it was. I wanted to make a ticket for it. Like, I almost like just made like a Man of Steel ticket and like put a picture of Hans on there. It was magical.
Wow. Dude, I'm very jealous.
Well, when Blast makes it big, we'll fork over the money and sit front row.
Yeah. Yeah. Once we have a gajillion, we'll have a private concert.
No, we'll just have him come in and do the score for the app. Like, anytime you make a ticket, some track plays.
I love it. It's funny. I forgot that you were going to that concert on Sunday, and the organ variation of STAY from Interstellar came on in the car.
Dude, he played that. It was gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yes. And dude, he's just a wizard. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so glad you guys got to go do that. That's like a once in a lifetime thing. And I mean, it sounds like it definitely lived up to expectations.
It exceeded expectations. He was phenomenal. He's such a great guy. Like, the inclusivity and the awareness and like shouting out like core members of his band and giving them solos and a platform. It was just, I mean, seriously, a 10 out of 10, AA+. It was one of the most special things I've ever watched.
Very cool. All right. Before we end up talking about this for an hour, let's get into Transformers 1.
You know, normally I'd crack a joke about a pivot to that. Movie was kind of fun.
I mean, you know that I hated the trailer to this. I thought the trailer looked absolutely horrible and did not want to go and see this at all. I went on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. But let me just dive straight into my blast ticket, honestly. I think that's the best way to kick this off. I said, three cars in the theater parking lot. Mine, the single employee at the theater, and a mom with her child. I guess Sunday morning isn't necessarily rush hour, but wow. Definitely enjoyed this more than I thought I would. Kind of like Battleship Potemkin for 8 to 10-year-olds. Also made me want to watch all the other Transformer movies. Parentheses, I'm sure I'll watch one and then regret it. Blast grade C, movie grade A minus.
Whoa, movie grade A minus. So aside from no one being in the theater, yet you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and honestly, the kid and the mom in the theater were cracking me up a couple of times. There's an ongoing gag where Bumblebee calls himself Badassatron, and the mom like kept explaining to her kid, like, no, that's a bad word. You cannot say that.
Badassatron.
When the big like twist in the movie happened, I heard the kid go, no way.
Oh, that's so awesome, man. That twist, I didn't know that this was an origin story. So that twist you're talking about, when I started to see it unfold, it's like, oh, man. Feel like I'm 8 years old again. It's cool. It's cool.
Nice.
So with that, my ticket, I saw it on Saturday night at 9 p.m. Again, not a movie I was that excited for. The trailers just looked like a plug for a bunch of new toys. But my ticket reads, I could feel the seven-year-old coming out a bit during this watch. Was it corny? 100%. Did I get goosebumps watching Megatron and Optimus Prime reach their final forms? Also 100%. Blast grade B plus, movie grade C. So the movie, for the first like 80 minutes, I was like, okay, this movie's made for kids, which is totally cool. But I felt myself wanting to watch the Michael Bay ones more until the last like 25 minutes, when it really just becomes the true origin story of those two characters and how they come to be. I like ear to ear smiling for the third act of this movie. I had a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the plot I think is the biggest for kids part of this. I felt like I knew what was going to happen probably within 5 minutes of it starting. But it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I didn't think that really detracted for me. Like, seeing the twist coming, I think, for me, made it more, like, watching Megatron and Optimus Prime, like the way that they saw the twist unfold, well, we already knew, I think was important to me to see like exactly who these characters are.
Yeah, I think the only thing that hurt it, the only thing this being a kids movie hurt for me, I felt like if this is PG-13 or even just a little more mature of a PG movie, we get a more thorough explanation or downfall of Megatron. And we understand his motivations. He turns angry or bad pretty quick there. It's like a quick 180. I think we could have seen a little more unfold if this is a PG-13 movie.
That's a very fair take. I will say, though, part of what helps that turn feel better is Brian Tyree Henry fucking kills it as Megatron.
Yeah, BTH was fun to see. And I had just rewatched Bullet Train, so it made it even that much better to see him at the helm. But he's such a likable guy that he works as Megatron in this movie. I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
I also thought Hemsworth did about as good of a job as he could have. I think it was an impossible task. Like, Peter Cullen is Optimus Prime. It's the most iconic voice ever. I think he was trying a little too hard to give a Cullen impersonation. I thought he was fine. Like, I thought the voice cast here was fine, pretty much across the board.
Most iconic voice ever is insane to say about Optimus Prime. It's like obviously Darth Vader.
All right, so second place. Sorry.
I could go back and forth here. But did you have like a least favorite part of the voice cast then, or just kind of all across the board? Okay.
John Hamm as Sentinel Prime was kind of weak, but everyone else didn't really move the needle for me. I thought everyone was fine. I'd say John Hamm was probably the weakest element.
So when I was watching this movie, I'm not going to lie, I pulled out my phone. Nobody was behind me, so I wasn't blinding anyone or anything. I had to check the voice cast because I thought Scarlett Johansson was Awkwafina. Like, it was...
Oh, no, really?
I fucking hated her voice in this movie for some reason.
Oh, I thought she was fine. That's funny that you associate hatred with Awkwafina, your like least favorite actor on the planet.
Yeah, pretty much. That was a big detractor for me. I thought she really did not give a good voice performance, but my favorite performance was absolutely our boy Lawrence Fishburne as like Alpha, what is it? Alpha Triad or something?
Who cares? The old Prime that basically teaches the new crew how to be Transformers.
Totally. Yeah, he was great. I liked him a lot.
You weren't rocking with Steve Buscemi as Starscream?
That's funny. This did have a very good cast for the most part. I thought Keegan-Michael Key was pretty great as B too.
Yeah, and how about that Aaron joke? Did you catch that when they kept referencing the robot as Aatron?
Yeah, dude, that was a good meta moment. I think that there were a lot of jokes in here for the parents, which was cool, and made me enjoy this experience a little more than I thought I would. That said, I'm going to ask the question. If this comes out in like 2010, do you think it's among the all-time best animated movies of all time?
No. I do you?
I think so, yeah.
Man.
Like, if this comes out pre... I don't know. Like, where's the bar here? Like, pre-Up, I think this is like a top five animated movie of all time.
Holy moly, that's insane. That's insane.
And now it's like probably top 50.
Yeah, if that. It's like hovering bottom of that list. It's pretty egregious, dude. You're missing out on a lot of like great Pixar movies pre-Up. That's bad. Like animated superhero movies, maybe if it came out then.
I don't know. This is by far the best Transformers film.
Bro did not watch the Michael Bay movie. You know what? I'm going to stand on business. The 07 Michael Bay movie is good.
No, it is not.
It is good.
That is a bad, bad movie.
You watched it. You didn't watch it when you were 7 years old. I know. You were too young to see it. It was special when it came out. It was. The whole time I was watching Transformers 1, I was like, man, I just want to watch Shia LaBeouf put the cube into Megatron one more time.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm trying to think of like anything else to talk about from this movie. I do like I gave it an A- because I was so impressed, and I think that it is a very good children's movie, but it's not a movie that necessarily lends itself to talking about for more than like 15 minutes. I mean, like, do you think this will start an animated Transformers movie series?
Yes, I genuinely do. I think it's going to make a lot of money. And it sets up a sequel. I know I'm invested. I want to see the next stages for Megatron and Optimus Prime. I'm totally in. I had fun. I'm in.
It's cool. And I do think that Transformers lends itself to animation a little more than live action.
100%. So I felt like, again, I wasn't a big Transformers kid growing up. I didn't watch the animated show. I wasn't like in tune with Transformers lore. So when people complained about the Michael Bay movies not honoring Transformers, I didn't get it. And then I watched this movie. I was like, okay, maybe this is the movie Transformers fans were looking for. Like going to what's the planet called? Cybertron, like seeing that lore and you can explore it. Yeah. You know what? When you do live action, you need the human element. When you go animated, you don't. And people want to watch these movies for the Transformers, not the humans. So I'm aligned. I like it.
Cool. Last question for you, I think, about this then is, what is your favorite like rebellion uprising in a movie?
Oh, Braveheart. Braveheart. 100%. It's a great movie.
Good choice. I think I have to go with Star Wars, specifically the rebellion in Rogue One, I think is my favorite version of it.
Oh, man, dude. Jack Wade was telling me, never seen Rogue One. Yeah. What a waste of, what's it been, 8 years now? How do you not at least catch that on Disney Plus at this point?
Dude, it's so good. I mean, you're going to lose so much from the theater experience there, too.
That's what I told him. I'm like, dude, that Vader scene, that's something like you tell your kids about. Like, yeah, I was there when Vader pulled up on the Rebels.
Six times, man. I saw it six times in theaters.
It's like the guy that saw Captain Marvel 150 times. Have you seen that meme?
No.
I'll send it to you when we're done. I hope producer Jack puts that in a clip.
One of my favorite YouTubers, Eddie Burback, did an experiment back when Morbius came out, going to see Morbius 7 times in a row on 7 days. And it was like, it drove him nuts.
1,000-yard stare.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else about Transformers 1, or are you cool moving on?
Let's get spooky, man. I'm ready.
Awesome. So this is our October pod series. Every week we are picking 3 movies. We're going to try and go with like kind of an old school hit, or at least like 20 years earlier hit. And then one of my favorites from the genre or the subgenre, and one of Ty's favorites from the subgenre. So this first week is haunted house movies. And just to give you a little preview, next week is, I believe, found footage. No, next week is folk horror, which I'm super excited for. We're going to be talking about some great ones, Candyman, Midsummer, and The Ritual. So be on the lookout for that. But for now, let's talk about The Shining, our popular pick of haunted house movies.
I mean, it's one of the greats. What else can you say? Kubrick's a wizard. I think this is a great movie. It needed to be the like popular pick for this category.
Do you? So I want to keep this discussion fairly short, because I just recently talked about this probably like 3 months ago on the pod when I read the book The Shining. But I do have a couple of questions. First off, do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
I actually do. So same buddy I watched 21 Jump Street with, I was at his place. Probably 12, 13 years old, shitting my pants. I don't remember the full experience. I remember 2 takeaways. One, the scene in the snow, Jack Nicholson running after his kid, scared me to high heavens. And the other thing, I didn't think Duvall was that great as a kid. Thought she was overacting her ass off.
That's a horrible take from young Ty.
Yeah, young Ty was not dialed in that day.
I also remember the first time I watched this. It was, I want to say October in my 8th grade as well. And my friend Josh had an OYTF championship, youth tackle football championship, that I had to go to at 2:00. And I started this movie with my dad at like 10 in the morning. On like a Saturday or
o'clock.
Something. Yeah.
Breakfast with The Shining. What a great combo.
It was some psycho shit, but I remember like the light leaking in from our windows and feeling like, how am I this scared when it's not even dark in here? Like, like, what is going on right now? How is this good? Especially because it was, I mean, this is an older movie, and older movies tend to not be as scary as they age, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this one's more psychological. It's not like jump scare fest. It just marinates and sits with you. And it scared me as a kid, and it's probably gotten scarier as I've gotten older.
I think I agree. And reading the book definitely gave me another appreciation of it as well. I wanted to try and watch the Stephen King version of The Shining, but it's like only available on DVDs in the UK or something. It's fucking impossible to find.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. Like, everyone you talk to is like, I love this movie. It's great. Like, it's really good. Even if they're not like blast grade high on it, I feel movie grade high they're on it. So what about this made it a cult classic? Like, why didn't it become an instant success?
I can't understand that either. Like, I think maybe just expectations were so high because it was Stanley Kubrick. And I feel like they live up to my Kubrick expectations. This isn't one of the first of his that I saw. But if you're like in the heart of his career, like, what does he come out with before this? Strangelove or 2001?
Both are out at this point. Shining was what? Was it early 80s or late 70s?
I believe early 80s, and you go to this and it is just a pure genre film. Like, I guess that's why people must not have liked it. That's the only thing I can think of.
I wonder what Roger Ebert thought. Maybe he like cooked it to high heavens and no one cared.
That would have been funny.
Bad take from Raj.
I don't know. Like, looking at this, it's hard to find many flaws, especially for a horror movie. I mean, if someone tells you that this is their goat pick for horror, like, what's your reaction?
It's a chalk pick, but I have to respect it because it deserves to be at least in the conversation.
Do you respect that more than The Exorcist?
Yes, I do. Okay. I wouldn't say I have better, but more memorable memories of The Shining than I do Exorcist. I think my mom would have a different answer. I think our parents would have a different answer.
Cool. The Exorcist, I'm sure we'll talk about sometime in this pod series, but that is a movie that we both disagree with the masses on. I do think that Nicholson should probably be considered among the greatest performances in a horror movie of all time. Like, who else is up there for you?
I think he's maybe one. Maybe it's tough. Like, two names come to mind in that conversation. If I'm missing anyone, please let me know. But Toni Collette from Hereditary, Lupita Nyong'o from Us. I think those are two just of the best of the best horror performances up there with Nicholson.
Lupita is absolutely my pick. I think that she kills it in Us, and the double role, like, cements how difficult that was. I mean, I did a segment on this not too long ago. I'm trying to remember the other names that I brought up because I had a top five somewhere. Let me page through my notebook for like 2 seconds here.
Is Florence Pugh from Midsommar on this list?
I believe she was, yes.
Too much screaming, too much crying for me. Iconic, but not one of my favorites.
Yeah, and my last was Hawk from Sinister. I think he kills it in that role.
Okay, I could see that. I could see that. That's got to be on... I'm surprised that wasn't your Haunted House pick.
I thought about it, but I can't put it there yet. I feel like it kind of belongs more in the folk horror category, honestly.
Okay, interesting.
But, yeah, I mean, it's not on that slate either, so maybe we should include it. I don't know. We've glazed that movie really so many times, though.
I for sure thought, all right, like, The Shining's our chalk pick. Maybe Steve, just to be funny, would put Dr. Sleep on his list for Haunted House. I know you love that movie.
Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, I did. And it's good. I don't think it lives up to The Shining per se, but it's a really good sequel. I think Ewan's awesome.
Hey, man, it's from our King of Horror, Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Flanagan, shocker. Always cooking. But Flanagan, McGregor, Rebecca Ferguson, I think are all great here.
Did you get to see it on the big screen?
No, this was a streamer for me.
I think that is part of the reason I love it so much. Seeing The Overlook like on the big screen was pretty unreal. It was kind of like that Darth Vader moment from Rogue One where I was just like, okay, yeah, this is fucking scary.
Yeah. Nothing to do with the scares. Something I really like about Dr. Sleep that we haven't gotten in this era is they just had the stones to recast Nicholson as the bartender. Like, they didn't try and de-age Nicholson. I kind of like that they just went the purest route here.
Yeah, you didn't want like a Indiana 5 happening?
No, or a Rogue One with Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh, God, and Leia. That's so weird.
And Leia. That was gross too.
Yeah, I think that this is one of the more solid legacy sequels we've ever gotten. Like, if not the most.
Force Awakens?
Yeah. Force Awakens is tainted by the two movies that come after. The girl in this movie kills it, the child actor. There's also a Jacob Tremblay spot in here, which is cool. He's from The Room and Good Boys is what's coming to mind.
All right, so I think we agree The Shining's better. If you had to rewatch one today, which one would you pick? Shining or Dr. Sleep?
It's The Shining every time.
It's the right pick. The right pick. But Dr. Sleep's fun. It's a good sequel.
It is, and I did really enjoy it. Do you have anything else to add about The Shining before we move on?
No, let's get to my pick. I I went complete 180 from The Shining here.
Ty's pick for this week was A Haunted House from Marlon Wayans. Talk me through your first watch.
I watched this. It's either seventh grade with my three or four middle school buddies. We watched it at one of my friend's houses in like the media room, and we're laughing our asses off for, you know, 2 hours, and quoted that movie, I shit you not, for like 9 months afterwards. There's so many bits here, and rewatching some clips today, I even caught myself laughing, not because it's like super funny as a 24-year-old. I could just remember 12-year-old me loving this movie.
I love it. And I think that if I would have watched it back then, I probably would have felt a little more favorably. I still had a good time with this movie. Don't get me wrong, but it was nowhere near as good a scary movie for me.
No. And it, I don't think it's anywhere near like the first three scary movies, but it's one of those kind of like Anchorman 2, where everyone loves Anchorman 1, but we quoted Anchorman 2 all the time in middle school. I still feel like we're quoting it today. It's like become a huge meme. Like it serves its purpose. Like it holds a special place in my heart.
Okay. I like that take. I will say my biggest problem with this movie is a little thing we learned about in film school called the rule of three.
All right, Professor Steve, lay it on me.
Basically the general guideline is a joke is funny three times. And then after you do it three times, it gets old. He was going with like the rule of 20 here a few times. And I was like, all right, let's move on here, bro.
Like which, what was your favorite bit? You know?
There were a lot of good ones. I think shitting in the ashes was the best.
Mine is brother Ray Ray and his boys pulling up to the house.
That was also hilarious.
I don't give a fuck, Keisha.
The swingers were also very, very funny.
Oh my god, dude. And like the Paranormal Activity nods, like I thought that was hysterical, like poking fun at that movie. There was a lot of fun to be had here. Is it a good movie? No. Is this a high blast grade for me? Yes, every single time.
I love it. And I honestly, there are a lot of great moments. And Marlon Wayans is, I think, a very gifted, like, comedic presence. I'm wondering why he isn't one of the, like, top dogs in the genre. Well, like, you have, I don't know, like, Jack Black, I guess, is up there. Kevin Hart. Who else is, like, the kings of comedy in today's era? Will Ferrell is kind of aging out now.
Yeah, he's done. I think Marlon Wayans, I think it was like a personal thing. Like kind of like how Ed Norton fell off the face of the earth. I think Marlon Wayans kind of did the same thing. Maybe there was a couple passings in the family that like put him like off the grid for a while, but he had his time in the sun. I mean, White Chicks, I think his brother's in the scary movies. They got the Wayne Brothers show. Haunted House was like his baby, like their shot at going for scary movie. Like they did a sequel. Like he had his time in the sun. It's not like he wasn't a huge face of comedy.
You know what's funny is he actually performed live here in Blono, like, I think a week ago.
What?
Yeah. It was.
Oh, you're kidding.
Two throwback people. So he performed, and then I think this past weekend was Kevin Gates, the Two Phones guy.
You're shitting me.
No, I'm not. We get, like, washed up dudes.
Marquette had T-Pain for like my sophomore year and he wouldn't play Kiss Me Through the Phone and he got booed off stage.
No way. That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he basically like gave everyone the bird because we didn't want to listen to his new music and he dipped.
Damn.
Sorry, T-Pain.
Yeah, T-Pain would have been a lot better than the options we have here. Do you have anything else about Haunted House? I feel like this is another one where it was a fun like 90-minute ride, and then I'm probably going to forget I watched this in like 2 weeks.
Sounds like a great Thai movie to me. We can move on.
All right. That brings us to our last movie of the week. I picked House from 1977 as my film. Ty, talk me through your first watch experience of this one.
I'll gladly do it. I mean, you can verify you were there for it. We had just gotten back from dinner, showed up to your house to watch this Criterion masterpiece that everyone seems to pick from the closet. It's regarded as one of like the greatest horror movies ever. All right, let's lock in. Let's do it. Steve, when I tell you, this might be the weirdest movie I have ever seen. Some of the visuals, the camera work, the editing, the lines, like the lines of dialogue, there is a lot wrong in this movie. There is a lot wonky in this movie. I think I love it. I couldn't stand it when we were watching for like the first hour. And then there's this one particular scene that I'm sure we're going to talk about regarding a piano that changed my tune and my perspective. And I understood why Bill Hader was like, watch House. This is good. Please.
So the piano scene brought you around. Yeah, this wasn't what I was expecting the first time I watched it either, obviously. I don't think you could describe it to anybody and properly warn them, though. I mean, so the piano scene is your favorite. Let's dive into that, because you really have to buy into the special effects, I think, of this to make it work, or just get used to it. But at the perfect time, one of the girls is eaten by a piano, and it is, like you said, one of the wonkiest things you'll ever see.
I think I asked Steve during that scene if this had better visual effects than the original Star Wars. Like, this movie came out the same year. I think this scene with the piano is more revolutionary than Star Wars.
I think it is. I mean... a lot of this movie is very funny, and this scene, I think, is also meant to be funny. I'm not 100% sure what the director's intent was, but you got Mr. Bones dancing in the background as the piano just, like, bangs down over and over again, chewing up this, what's her name?
Who cares? It's not Mac. Mac's the only name I remember because she got bullied for an hour and a half. Justice for Mac, man. Fat shaming like a poor, like, 90-pound girl. It's just, it was heart-wrenching. But I remember there was a scene, like, she basically gets killed off, and the other girls assume that she had smelled the potato farm, like, a mile away and ran off to go eat potatoes. I mean, how fucked up is that?
It's one of the funniest moments in the movie. Is that and her becoming a watermelon and being eaten are both just absolutely bonkers. I mean,
this movie's bonkers, top to bottom. It's like, it's the weirdest movie I've ever seen. It's the least scary movie I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen another movie like House, and I think that's why I respect it. I will never see another movie like it.
And I think that this is, like, so if Zack Snyder doesn't have any studio interference, like, is this what we get?
No, I think if Skinamarink gets a sequel greenlit, they go the comedy route, and this is what it produces.
One of the funniest pod jokes I've ever heard was Chris Ryan and Sean Fennessy talking about Skinamarink. They asked, what do you think is the Skinamarink kids equivalent to watching Skinamarink? And they answered Aaron Rodgers walking out on Monday Night Football during his ACL week one.
1,000-yard stare.
So when we finished watching this movie, I was interested because, I mean, you were very frustrated at times with this movie. I remember about 30 minutes in, you said, I mean, when are these girls just going to get to the fucking house? It's the name of the movie.
It took forever. I swear we're watching a haunted house movie. It's your pick for haunted house. We're not even at the house until, like, it's like the 40-minute mark. What are we doing? This movie's weird, man. But this movie's just weird. I'm having a hard time with this one.
So what's your final blast and movie grade? Because you said it'd take you a few days to figure that out.
It took me until like this morning when I saw you ask that question. Okay. Movie grade. B minus. I think it takes way too long to get to the house and get to the meat and potatoes and the fun of this movie. It's really stupid. There's some stuff that's aged. I don't care what anyone says, like product of its time, yada, yada, yada. There's some stuff that ages really poorly here that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
Aside from that, had a lot of fun. I was laughing my ass off. And I think that's the hardest I've laughed in probably 2 years. It was a great movie watch with you. And because of that, last grade, A minus.
Do you think if you watched this alone, what would your thoughts have been?
Double F, probably. Double F.
All right. Good to know. I'm glad I got to expose you to this movie because, like you said, there is nothing else out there like it, like even close to like it. But I think that's a good point to wrap that portion of the pot up and really transition into a broader view of haunted house movies. So you've heard us talk about a general hit and a couple of our favorites. Ty, I want to hear your haunted house checklist. Like, what do you need from every haunted house movie to make it in your top 15?
Okay. All right. Let's get controversial here. Number one thing, cobwebs. I need this house to be grimy. They need to be dusty. I don't want to see a vacuum in sight for 15 years. This has got to be a gross house. No score for 60% of the movie. I want to deal with the silence and the raw noises of whatever's going on here. One hot chick has to be there. I don't care what anyone says. I need that to keep me engaged. Another character archetype that I need to keep me engaged, some asshole. Like, I need one character that I want to see die in the worst way possible. That's something I'll look forward to throughout the movie. And then at the five spot, another archetype, I need a wizard. Like, I need someone super smart that is thinking logically the whole time, doesn't make dumb decisions, saves the group, or at the very least saves themselves.
So, Kung Fu.
Dude, Kung Fu. Shout out Kung Fu. I forgot about Kung Fu from House. She's the biggest... She defeated the bad guy after she'd gotten eaten. It was just her leg. Talk about superpowers. Kung Fu, top five superhero, maybe ever.
Does she beat John Wick?
Yeah. Okay. I think without question.
Cool. I went in definitely a different route than you for this.
you weren't thinking cobwebs and Florence Pugh?
No. Dude, I was waiting for the I need a pet to die remark from you.
Dude.
It happens in every one. And that's I don't like need that. Every time, that's the moment where I probably leave the house as soon as the pet dies.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like, I need one character that's like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, let's move out. I don't care if we just bought the place. Damn it, Dad, shut up. Get in the car. We're leaving.
All right, my checklist. I need things to happen at 3 in the morning or somewhere around there. I need it to be super late at night and creepy things happening. Number 2, I need a locked door that nobody can get into no matter who, what keys they try, no matter what they do. Number 3, I need a mystery of like a who is haunting this place, what's going on here, like what's the backstory. Similar to your character archetypes, I need an idiot who like has no clue what's going on the entire time and is just there for comedic relief. And my last one, I think you're going to disagree here, I need 3 or more jump scares for a haunted house movie.
I got to tell you, dude, I think you just described Hill House with Marlon Wayans as a side character.
That's great. I might have.
It's a great checklist. I mean, more intricate than mine. I mean, I would have included cobwebs at 3 a.m., but other than that, I think it was pretty good. But awesome. I mean, the whole time, like, mystery, a locked door, an idiot character. I don't know. That sounded like it.
I see that. Let's go through this. I want to do a haunted house draft here because we love drafts on this pod. And I mean, this feels like a layup. Let's go 5 movies here because there's a pretty good selection.
All right. I'm thinking of a number between 1-5. I won't cheat. I have my number. That's not going to work. I just want the first pick.
Yeah, just take the first pick, dude.
Sinister.
Okay, I do like that pick a lot. But I'm going to follow that up with The Conjuring 2.
Damn it.
And with my second pick, oh man, I think I'm going to go Hill House.
Does that count?
Do you want to exclude limited series?
Yeah, I do. You don't get it.
Okay. 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 Here's another questionable one then. I want to go Insidious.
That was on my list. It's on the short list.
Okay. I'll take it. Oh,
see, this is what I get for going 1-1. Okay. Pick number two. Give me Paranormal Activity at the 3-1. Give me Monster House.
Nice. That's a good pick. That's a great Halloween movie, too.
Love Monster House.
Okay. I've got 3 and 4 here. I'm going to go... okay, number three, I think I have to play a classic here and go with Poltergeist.
God damn it. Damn it. I felt like you wouldn't take it. You don't strike me as a Poltergeist guy.
It's not my favorite, but I think it is a very good haunted house movie.
It's phenomenal. It's a great pick.
Just like I would have picked Hill House over Bly Manor because I think Hill House is the better haunted house story. I think Bly Manor is the better love story. My fourth, I'm going to go with The Innocents from 1961. This is a Deborah Kerr movie. It is an early adaptation of the same thing of Bly Manor.
I remember you telling me about this one. Like, it's free on YouTube or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Because it's so old.
Yep. All right. These are my last two picks?
Yep.
Okay. Since you took number two, I'm going to take the first Conjuring. I like Conjuring 2 more, but this is still like top tier horror of the last 20 years. I'm going to take the Conjuring in the fourth round. It's great value. And then the fifth spot, this is more practical. Give me The Money Pit with Tom Hanks. This is not a horror movie in any realm. He just buys a house and it just becomes there's a new problem every 2 minutes he has to fix, and it becomes an actual money pit, an actual real life nightmare. It had to be on the list.
Is it haunted?
No, I don't think so. I think the infrastructure just sucks.
Okay. I have two ways I could go here, because there is one movie that recently came out that is a very, very good haunted house movie, and another one that is not scary either that I'm thinking about taking. And
is Abigail the one you're talking about?
No, that's not haunting. That's a vampire. I have to go A Ghost Story. I mean, it's my favorite movie of all time. Haunted house to its core, even if it isn't scary. The one I was teetering on was Hell House LLC Carmichael Manor.
I was waiting for that one. And I'm guessing Beetlejuice is on your like deep waiver cuts or no?
It's not even on here. Other ones that I didn't draft, Ghostwatch, which I think I told you about. It's kind of like Late Night with the Devil, but good. And The Others with Nicole Kidman. It's a good one.
Cool. That's a really good one. That kind of an underrated movie.
It's hard, I think, because no streaming has it. Not many people know like what it actually is.
Did you see that Flanagan's movie Hush finally got a studio or a company to produce the hard copy of it? It's strictly been streaming since it came out. Finally has hard copies coming out.
Very cool. I might buy that. They tease Midnight Mass in that movie.
Where? Oh, the script?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Very
That's
cool.
Your favorite of the shows, right?
Yes, by far. Yeah.
I think that's like a top five horror movie of all time, if it's a movie.
All right, let's recap this draft real quick. So Haunted House Movies draft, 5 teams each. I ended up with The Innocents from 1961, A Ghost Story, The Conjuring 2, and Insidious and Poltergeist.
I took Sinister, Monster House, Conjuring 1, Paranormal Activity, and Tom Hanks' Money Pit.
I honestly like your team better until we get to the Money Pit.
Mr. Funny strikes again. If only I had just taken, like, anything. Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll pick him up on waivers.
Good call. Good call. you can throw Money Pit on IR. I heard that they have some foundation problems.
Yep.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Last Podcast. We are very appreciative of your time. If you haven't downloaded the Blast app yet, be sure to search Blast Movie App on the App Store or head to our website, www.blastmovies.net. Also on our website is a feedback form, which we would really appreciate if you fill out. And also, you can check out our TikTok and our Instagram for more pod clips, bonus content, news. Our TikTok is at blast.movies and our Instagram is at blast_movies_. We look forward to next week having you back on here for folk horror movies, some of my favorites. And in the meantime, have a great rest of your week.